Hi, good day. My name is Dr. Adam Tilene. I'm the committee secretary.
Good day. My name is Abdullah Hanif. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Morning. My name is Shiri Che, presenting Wahake.
How do you get your finger now?
Morning, my name is Masfa Gorikhal from Limpopo province.
Good morning, I'm Elza van Lingen and I'm from the Eastern Cape.
Morning, Bafuna Nimuguni, first state.
Morning, Chomo Nyambi, Mpumalanga province.
My name is Zwana Zola from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
And I'm Jan van Vollenhoven from the Department of International Relations and Cooperation.
Morning, R.S. Kopa, Parliamentary Officer, Department of International Relations.
Thanks very much. Let's keep on with the presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. At the outset, may I please bring you regards from my ministry. There's a cabinet meeting today, so the ministers cannot be here, the deputy minister. The other deputy minister, Ibrahim, is holding fort in Pretoria, and my DG and my DDG is in very urgent preparations for both regional heads of mission taking place starting on Saturday in Europe, in Brussels, as well as the EU ministerial forum, which starts and coincides with the heads of mission on Monday and Tuesday, actually on Friday, Monday and Tuesday in Brussels. So unfortunately they are occupied with that, and they've then delayed my departure for Brussels to prepare so I could honor you today with our presentation on it. When it gets to the presentation, Mr. Chair, it is now the amendment to the Trade Development Cooperation Agreement with the European Union. Now, in general, what I have for you today is a good news story. There's no controversial issues involved in this review. There's some very interesting kind of successes that we've had with it. And if you recall the briefing that I gave to this committee about the review of the Cotonou Agreement and its delay, I want to remind you that that delay was due to the fact that we were also negotiating this particular review of the TDCA agreement, and the weapons of mass destruction issues is what delayed, and I will relate to that now. So firstly, if we look at the basic background, let me also just preface by saying, I believe you all have a copy of the presentation. I will also give to Ernest, for those who may be interested, a copy of the narrative. Or did you give it up?
I didn't give
it. Oh, you? So you? Yeah, that's right. So the narrative is also in your hands. So when it gets to the different articles, I will maybe select more important ones, because the rest, like energy, is non-controversial, as you have it on paper. Unless you want me to take you through everything. I'm perfectly happy to do that. The relevant. Okay, so I will keep it more concise. Firstly, the Training Development Cooperation Agreement is the legal foundation of our relations with the European Union. Subsequent to that, we have also entered into a strategic partnership, which now is the umbrella over this TDCA agreement, but this remains the legal foundation of our cooperation with the European Union. It was entered into in 1999, and as you know, was partially implemented in 2000 and fully implemented in 2004, with a political dialogue, trade-related issues, development cooperation, and then cooperation in other areas, chapters in this TDCA. Now, firstly, the trade and trade-related issues, chapters, are really under the mandate of the Department of Trade and Industry. Hence, you will find, I find that when it gets to the review of those, it is led by DGI. When it gets to development cooperation, as you know, it's structured in South Africa, the development assistance comes through the Treasury leads on that. But with the political dialogue and the economic cooperation and cooperation in other areas, the Department of International Relations and Cooperation leads and also led the review. We, as international relations, are the custodians of the implementation of this agreement. And in terms of this agreement, there is what we call a Joint Cooperation Council. And all the technical areas of cooperation with all the different departments, as you will see set out in this agreement, all report to the JCC. This JCC, Joint Cooperation Council, which functions at the level of Directors General, reports to the Ministerial Forum, usually in the second half of the year, which then reports to the summit, to the heads of state, about the implementation of this agreement specifically. Now, the other important thing to realize and understand is that even the trade-related chapter, although they are under the lead of the Department of Trade and Industry, through the, what's it called, the Trade Cooperation Council, the TCC, the Trade Cooperation Council, is DGI-led, but that reports to the JCC. Treasury, in their annual review with the European Union, also reports to the JCC, and therefore it is reporting to international relations and cooperation because we are the custodians of this agreement. Now, I'm not going to emphasize the trade chapters now, because remember, when we were busy reviewing the trade chapters, the EPA negotiations came onto the scene, controversial as they may be. South Africa then decided to ask the European Union to rather join the EPA negotiations than the TDCA review in order to enhance regional integration. We didn't want to see we having a trade agreement, our SACU and SADC EPA partners having another kind of an agreement. Let's have one agreement. So we suspended the review of this, and we entered the EPA negotiation. The other not... reason is that it's not necessarily an instructive reason, but it also allowed a window of opportunity to see if we can end up TDCA plus under EPA instead of tinkering on the TDCA, but that is a lesser important consideration. So the review of the trade chapters was then taken out. The review of the development cooperation chapter, as I've said, was then also led by National Treasury and the Department of Cooperation and International Relations, other way around, then basically reviewed the rest of the text. Now, you will see some interesting trade figures there, but we're not going to talk about that. We believe that the TDCA has been hugely beneficial to South Africa. You will see the exponential growth in trade in the trade figures, but also the growth in the cooperation at a technical level with the European Union is astounding. We have at this particular point, as you will see on in your narrative that you have there, already established cooperation forums with the European Union at senior officials level, a peace and security dialogue, the annual consultation review with Treasury leads, a science and technology cooperation committee, which is extremely effective and active, the Trade Cooperation Council, which I refer to, that overlooks the implementation of the trade chapters, a forum on environment and sustainable development, also hugely active, a new forum on migration, on health, on space cooperation, on energy dialogue, on maritime transport, and also on of course aviation, on transport in general. We have joint parliamentary association that I just briefed yesterday, the South African side of the team, and we have also established a forum and a dialogue on ICT, the nation's communications technology. That's where we already stand in rolling out these cooperation forums with the European Union. And the next step now is to do also one on education, on crime and justice, on social dialogue, on customs cooperation, cooperation on statistics and on culture. So you can see this is a very wide array. Now, how these forums work is we take all the relevant... We take all the relevant departments as they are involved in the issues of migration or of transport, because transport is not only about transport, there's also security issues in transport and safe harbors and non-proliferation issues in transport. So we bring in all the necessary role players into such a forum at officials level, and the idea is for them to develop work programs of cooperation with one another in order to advance our interests in all of these different areas of cooperation. Now, also we have just established under this TDCA a quantum of money from our country allocation from the European Union. We take 5 million euros, so it's 50 million rand, in a TDCA facility which will support the work of these forums. In other words, it's not development assistance that's going to go into a department's program of, you know, food delivery to schools or something. It is solely to support this strategic interaction of the forums, and will pay for things like setting up meetings and attending conferences and study tours and so forth. So, we are dealing here with an extremely important set of an agreement here, because the European Union, as I would like to argue, is probably truly a fundamentally strategic partner in South Africa due to the magnitude of our exposure to the economic interests in the European Union. It contributes to our total trade. About a third of our trade, total trade, is with the European Union. It is by far the largest official development assistance donor to South Africa. Over a period of 6 years, the tranche that we're in now was 900 million euros. It's a billion, it's 10 billion rand. The European Investment Bank has a tranche for its 6-year term of another 930 million euros, which is already obligated 3 years before it expires. It is now in its midterm review, and we are going to ask the European to add another 600 million euros to the 900 million euros. So, you know, a third of our economy is really reflected in our relationship with the European Union. And now we are building this up into technical cooperation on this wide array of areas. So this is a truly very important piece of legislation, of international agreement. We have added 35 new articles. In other words, it's 35 new areas mostly of engagement and of regularizing our engagement with the European Union. And this was completed at the end of 2007, but also because of the EPA negotiations, we delayed a little bit the signing of this agreement to see if we could get leverage out of it. The strategy didn't really work, so we decided to move away from that and to get it done, because we have such fundamental interests in the cooperation on this agreement that we decided that we cannot allow the difficulties in the EPA negotiation now to cause stumbling blocks for other areas of cooperation like maritime cooperation and that type of thing. So now this was signed then at the Claymont Summit on the 11th of September 2009, not far from here. I think we've mostly reflected on this. A very important element now, the European Union have the instruction to their commission that they have to include human rights and non-proliferation in all international agreements that the European enters into as a matter of a fundamental principle to the agreement. That is an essential element of this. is an essential element of the agreement. In other words, if that agreement, that element, that clause is broken, then it's the deal breaker. The entire agreement is then nullified by it. So they insisted on including the human rights part we had no problem with, and we signed it. But they wanted to include non-proliferation as an essential element of the agreement. We then said, they also did that, as you may recall from my previous presentation to you on the review of the Cotonou Agreement, they introduced the very same in the Cotonou Agreement, which started before this. Again, with the human rights, we didn't have a problem, but then we argued you cannot only place obligations on us in the developing world, ACP context now, Cotonou Agreement, that we may not proliferate. We don't even have the technology mostly, but you want to place obligations on us not to proliferate. But you are silent on your disarmament obligations. And they then resisted this, and the other Cotonou partners got annoyed with us for harping on this disarmament issue and said, okay, now take it out and go and do it in the TDCA review. So this was, in fact, the very last matter to be resolved in the TDCA review, is the fact that we resisted, insisted in South Africa to link disarmament and non-proliferation as two sides of the same coin of global governance on weapons and the production and the technology there. You will maybe recall an interesting point that my Deputy Minister Ibrahim, in his budget vote speech this year, again reiterated that South Africa absolutely fundamentally insists on the linkage between disarmament and non-proliferation. The European Union resisted heavily. In their view, it was forward of a developing country to come and tell them what they should do with their nuclear arsenal. So we just said, tough, we are not moving on this issue because to us, the international obligations are about disarmament and we must recognize both. Eventually, we succeeded and the European Union agreed to wording that links non-proliferation and disarmament for the very first time in an international agreement of this nature. And that we want to see as a breakthrough in our relationship with the European Union and in our dealing with them. The essential elements of the agreement then also refer to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and then and the disarmament issue, as we have already said. Now we get to the changes and the additions of text, mostly related to cooperation in the different sectors that we want to cooperate in. Here is one on information society and ICT issues. I mean, the text is before you, I don't have to read it, and it simply establishes a dialogue forum on those matters, on energy. There's a strong emphasis in the energy forum, of course, on supporting South Africa to develop green sources of energy. The European head of the European Investment Bank has just been to South Africa, and they're just holding a tray with money to say, if it's for green energy, here's money. You know, take the money for green energy. So there's a lot of support for that. Mining and minerals cooperation, obviously the EU is concerned about China and Africa, but we place the emphasis, of course, on beneficiation of minerals and support for that, to promote that. Transport, there's great interest, especially maritime transport, to cooperate with the European Union in terms of maritime safety standards, maritime training academy that they want to establish. So there's a very strong cooperation there. I can just, if it's a matter of interest, flag not a dispute, but a sore point between us and the European Union is aviation. There was a European court ruling that the air services agreements, bilateral air services agreements, with the European Union by outside countries, non-members, were illegal in terms of European law. Because Europe does not allow any discrimination between the European Union members in terms of rights of aviation.
Any company can fly anywhere if it's a European company within Europe. So there's no way that that we can restrict who can really fly to us somewhere in Europe. So South Africa is at this particular point, transport was very dubious and saw some real commercial threats in this. We worked hard with transport to say, well, you know, you can't just stick your head in under the pillow and hope it goes away, because it ain't going to go away. So address it, you know, take the bull by the horns and address this thing. They have now commissioned a study which has come out with some proposals, and we will start engaging the European Union soon, because we have one of three choices. Either we do nothing, which probably will lead to a suspension of rights to fly to Europe, or we will have to update all the bilateral air services agreements in order not to be in conflict with the European Court ruling, or we will have to sign a so-called horizontal air services agreement with them, which is fine. Their view, not open skies, but horizontal air services. So transport, there's some lively interchanges and some real interest. The maritime is very, I said, very keen on cooperating. Tourism cooperation, development cooperation, of course, this is now that the stuff really that National Treasury lead, and they will have a review very soon. They're in preparations for a review, midterm review of that development cooperation chapter with the European Union. There's an interesting article, 65A, which deals with development benchmarks, the Millennium Development Goals, the Monterey Financing for Development Commitments, the Joburg Plan of Action in terms of environmental issues, and the European the African Union Socioeconomic Program. It recognizes those and commits the parties to strive to meet those goals. Then there's an article on science and technology and on environment. Obviously, there's a very... Let me just point out that South Africa is the fourth largest non-European participant in the framework research program. It's a 55 billion euro, 550 million rand program. So we come after the United States, Russia, and Japan. So you can see that our cooperation here, we're in the big league when it gets to scientific cooperation with the European Union. And it is all, and I must admit that the science and technology cooperation comes from a previous agreement. So that's been running for a couple of years, longer than the other forms of cooperation. But there is an example of where we want to take these cooperation forms, then that example is the science and technology cooperation forum, where we rank number four in the league of Russia, Japan, and the United States. Environment cooperation, very active, very dynamic. Social issues, a new one that looks at the social issues from gender to decent work to violence against women and children's rights. This one, as you can see, is a vast area of dialogue. This is more kind of a policy dialogue, a best practice dialogue, and we are in the process of taking off on this one. The fight against drugs and money laundering is one that they steer the cooperation on crime, international crime, towards this big problem, well, in South Africa too, as well as in Europe, with illicit drugs, of course. And then the weapons of mass destruction article, I think we've talked enough about that to essentially link the two, and respect, of course, to the obligations of all relevant international agreements, not just some agreements as you choose them. We said all of them have to be recognized and specialized. Combating terrorism is, of course, something that came about in the review because, as you know, the issue of terrorism didn't really start with 2010. There was also the Nairobi bombing and that kind of thing. But the 9/11 thing brought it much to a fore and found its way also into this agreement, combating of terrorism. And there we obviously, our position is we will work with all parties within the prescripts of international law and the multilateral institutions to combat terrorism and exchange information on the combat of terrorism. No issues about that. Money laundering, again, same category. Combating organized crime, small arms and light weapons is something that we simply insisted on entering into in this agreement because, as you know, we have a scourge of small arms in Africa. As they say, in Africa, small arms are our weapons of mass destruction. is small arms, and we need to cooperate with the European Union also to stop the flow of small arms. Mercenaries too, cooperation on that to put a stop to soldiers for hire. International Criminal Court reaffirming our support and commitment to the International Court and to popularize the universality of the integrity of the Rome Statute of the International Court. Migration cooperation. We have a lot. We insisted, when the European Union introduced the migration clauses, all they wanted to do is throw up the centers in Europe and put obligations on us to stop people streaming to Europe. They wanted third country return policies to say if a Nigerian comes to South Africa and enters Europe from South Africa, they send him back to South Africa, not to Nigeria. So anybody who now suddenly, you know, stows away on a ship that happened to originate in South Africa, all those on the ship gets repatriated back to South Africa and becomes our problem. This is no way, we're not going that direction. And we insisted on the linkage between migration and development, so that migration doesn't become an immigration issue for the European Union, but people migrate. There are economic migrants, there are intellectual migrants, students, and we also try to work on finding a way for people from Africa and South Africa then who go to Europe for work and exposure to find a way to manage it in such a fashion that they must come back and plow back into South Africa also. So migration is something that we want to cooperate on because we face similar problems with illegal immigration between South Africa and Europe. We face similar problems with integrating other nationalities into our societies. We've seen the manifestation of the xenophobia in South Africa a while ago. We have the massive immigration problem. We have the issues, which was not necessarily discussed in this context, that you have the contradiction that if you have an illegal immigrant, he can necessarily not legally work or legally pursue business. So for him to, or her to sustain him or herself, the only option is crime. So hence there is an added effect, a knock-on effect on crime. So we have a lot of these issues to cooperate with the European Union, with the emphasis on development and our own issues. So we didn't tie into this as helping the EU prevent immigration into the EU. Failure to ratify this, in my view, I humbly submit, would be hugely sorry for South Africa. This is a very beneficial agreement. There's nothing controversial in this agreement. It is, we're very happy with the developments and the cooperation we have under this agreement. We would find it very disappointing if there is a contrarian view to this. We would be hugely surprised by it. So I humbly submit to you that we request you to please support the ratification of this agreement. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm ready to take questions.
I'll remind Lupera that each time we come here, must get the master mic here. Because then it gives me the authority. Otherwise, I'll have to ask to speak. Thanks very much. Honorable members, you can see how diverse this agreement is. And it has got quite a number of things. But it's your opportunity to engage on this issue. Quite a number of most departments are involved here. And in most cases, they converge into this committee. So this is an opportunity for us to engage another department on these issues. But at the end of the day, we are required to rectify when we are satisfied that now this will really benefit. That's the opportunity. Honorable Mguni.
Thank you, Chairperson. It is fascinating, really, to
to interact with people who sit there as negotiations to tell us really what is exactly happening there. Because Jefferson, you go through the literature, you know, it's littered with all the inconveniences, the West, Europe, US, when they actually subsidize or they pump money into developed countries, the so-called conditions, or face those conditions, they suit the EU, they suit the US, not us, developing countries. So I'm just surprised, or rather, I marvel at they say the honorable or the von Vollenhoven says that they ask another 600 euros, and they've got another 930 euros over the 3 years, which amounts to roughly 9.1 billion rand, of which really with so much money, what is our pound of flesh? And also, I've seen there also on the beneficiation of minerals. How are they? Because it's actually the West economies, especially from Harvard, Massachusetts, and other countries that said South Africa should forget about beneficiation of minerals. You know, there was that cross paper that the former Minister of Money commissioned on the economic growth in South Africa, the cross paper. So they shut down beneficiation. I just want to know, in this case, they are great that there should be no, we should push for beneficiation. How do we for do you foresee us benefiting from beneficiation, especially Europe? How are they going to help us to do that? Thank you.
The question. Okay, you can respond to that.
I'm sorry for this disturbance. This is now all the heads of mission in the EU frantically calling because they all got instructions to make presentations. And now I was the messenger. Now they're all slapping me and calling me all the time. So I'm after anything about that. Let me start off then by, is it Mr. Nguyen? That's right, Mr. Nguyen. Let me firstly talk about the beneficiation one. That's going to be the lesser one. You know, what we talk about here, I hear you when you say that argument came up that beneficiation is not the way to go for us because it's too expensive, the job creation in it is too expensive, it doesn't make sense. But that doesn't mean that all forms of beneficiation is now to be abandoned in that. For instance, Antwerp is the world's leading diamond cutting center. And as you know that we have a vibrant diamond industry, but we don't cut our own diamonds. So we're not talking about that heavy industrial beneficiation thing to make metals and things when we talk about this. It is on areas where beneficiation makes sense to us that we get them with technology cooperation, standard setting, and that type of thing, and what has worked for them and what has not worked for them is more what we're talking about. So we're not talking about working with the European Union, remember the collectivity, in building a smelter in Kuhau or something, aluminium smelter in Kuhau. That's not what we're talking about here. It is more in terms of what are the types of policies that have worked in the European Union for beneficiation, what are the type of technologies and technology standards that they can apply, that they can share with us if it comes to things, because we're really trying to do diamond beneficiation in South Africa. That was one of the sticky issues, matter of factly, in the EPA negotiations, that the EU wanted to put a ban in the EPA negotiations on any export taxes. And as you know, we have an export tax on diamonds to put an incentive on the exporters to beneficiate here. So that is the type of beneficiation that we're talking about. So we recognize that argument that debate exists. When it gets to development assistance, yes, it is true that when anybody gives anybody money, they usually have a condition to us. If you send your child to the cafe to buy sandwiches and he comes back with cigarettes, you're going to be upset about that. That was not the reason why you gave the money. But it is true that development assistance has a very bad name in history for the interference, and especially in Africa, that it has done, and then maybe also in places like Latin America. However, in the case of South Africa, there are two levels of this assistance. The one is the direct support, the budget,
of the European Union allocates a quantum of money to South Africa, that 900 million over a period of 6 years. And that used to go into the European Union, sitting in their own offices, making their own plans, doing projects of their own without relating to us. That is the type of thing that you are talking about, which is in their interests and not in ours. We, however, insisted, and it started, that all money must go through government. We don't. If it is support for government, it must go through government. So to make a long story short, we have worked with the European Union to shift their development assistance from project support to general budget support. So in this annual review, Treasury sits down with all the government departments and decide with the European Union what are the priorities of health for the next 7 years. The priorities for education, priorities for crime and justice. Then the European Union says, okay, we agree with these priorities. Or the European Union will say, but we find that in our view of the European Union, there is a lack of emphasis on tuberculosis, for instance. We would like to see you also pay attention to tuberculosis. If we think it's not necessary, we argue the case. Once we have reached agreement on what the priorities are, then the European Union gives us a quantum of money and says, that's for health. Go do the program on health as you have developed it yourself. So it moves away from them manipulating projects for nefarious purposes and their own purposes towards supporting us in where we want to take them. Now, in a sense, it still remains in their interest, but it is not as malevolent as it used to be. Still, the European Union sees things like HIV/AIDS as a major security threat because it believes it will subtract from our economic growth, it will impact on the quality of society, it will lead to further poverty if you leave it to get out of hand. That will lead to increased pressure on migration to Europe from Africa. So for them to have a healthy South Africa is in their national security interest, in their own perception. So that is why even they give the money to us in South Africa and say, okay, we've agreed what is important here. We agree with you, this is important. So here's money going to be. So there's no longer manipulating the details in the process. So for that reason, I would argue South Africa has succeeded in excising the malevolent quality of development. When it gets to the European Investment Bank, the one where we say we want more money, that's extremely important to realize that this is a bank that borrows money largely for infrastructure projects, lots of municipal water, electrification, road construction, dam building, reservoir building, that type of thing, is where that money goes into. The money is not concessional money. It's not giveaway money. It is money at preferential interest rates, better than we can raise on the market, lower interest rates. This money is given to the private sector as well as municipalities and government. And on that, we have absolute and total control. The European Union says either they will, through the European Investment Bank, they will finance a project or they won't finance it, period. If the business plan is there and the numbers work out, they're eager to finance because they're an investment bank. If the numbers doesn't work out, then they say, okay, you go try another bank. We don't think this project's going to work. So there is also very little room in that equation for the manipulation of interests. We will simply walk away if they do that and go to the World Bank, African Development Bank. Private banks can also give money to them. So we still have that element that we go, if we want to build a bridge or a reservoir, we go and we look at where can we invest the best interest rate on the money. The European Union is so good in their offer to us, in their rates to us, that we have fully taken up the 900 million. It's fully committed for the 6 years. That's why we want to up it to 1.5 billion. Because this is good money. going after infrastructure projects totally, absolutely, and completely under our control at good rates. So I would submit that we don't have a problem with this. And we don't have
Honorable Adam, Honorable Nyambi.
Thank you, Chair. Start by thanking the presenter for the in-depth presentation. just one question, Chair. The other projects that the European Union are funding currently in South Africa, how will this agreement affect that project? Will it affect it, or will it be beneficial? Will that project still go ahead, or will it be stopped when this agreement comes into place? And just playing devil's advocate, because the presenter has convinced me to vote in favor of the agreement, because he's very persuasive. Should have been a doctor, a medical doctor. If we postponed in approving this, what negative impact will it have on the country and on the other agreements? Just hypothetical questions.
I'm going to want to follow up.
Thanks, Chair. Let me also join and welcome the presentation that is really informative and assisting. I heard from the presenter saying the revised Article 60, that is like 10, dealing with tourism. As a person coming from a village in Mpumalanga, in a rural area, you are saying that has been broadened to include the development of local communities. I'm interested in understanding that. If you can do a little bit of the elaboration, how is that going to assist our local communities? Because we are saying it has been revised in a manner that will make sure that at the end of the day, local communities are going to benefit. That's your slide 10. Thanks, Chairperson.
Farling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I nearly asked you to put your sunglasses on again so that you could see me. I want to add on to Honourable Nyambi and Honourable Adams. I really think it's fantastic, and I'm very happy that you took the time out to do this for us, rather than ignoring the NCOP as the backstage of Parliament. Thank you very much. The EU gave money from the last lot, and the figure that I have in my mind was that it was 820 million euros. All of that money was put into the Tina Sonako Fund for Economic Development and Tourism. Now, in the previous session that we had here, I followed that up, and I'm now busy with the Department of Tourism, who told me that that grant money works through Treasury. The CFO then put me in contact with a person at National Treasury who is busy with that. But where do we find a list of the projects that you do with this? Where do you understand what I'm asking? So we were told that that was for economic development and tourism. So if the new batch comes up to add on to Honorable Adams and Nyambi, what are the new projects? What are the old projects? How do we know what's happening where? And is everybody utilizing the opportunities that are there, and not that it doesn't go by the wayside somewhere?
Mine will come also on the issue of tourism, just also on Article 60. Trying to read it, it says, because it is being amended, Now it reads to promote the development of products and markets, human resources, and institutional structure, that is a C, and the E, to cooperate in developing and promoting community-based tourism. I think that's quite specific. I think Honorable Nyambi wanted that, you know. If you develop community-based tourism, like what? Well, just zoom into that. Because most of these provinces have communities that actually want to utilize these funds. Now, the scary part is that the funds that you have is already committed, all committed, and it would have been nice if, you know, we had some explanation of where committed, because the rest of that fund could be committed, I don't want to say in KZN, or in one province. So for us, as an interest in the NSOP, it would have been quite nice to know, you know, the commitment of this money is divided into such and such provinces, so that we see that all is balanced, so that the other that is coming can be spread also equally. I also had on Article 86 on social issues, the issue about unemployment. How is it related to the infrastructure that is going to be, is that going to be sustainable? Or when that infrastructure is being laid, then we'll have employment, and then it will, only those two.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me quickly deal, no. I think, Mr. Adam, I used to work with the European, with the U.S. Now, I always want to call you Congressman and Congresswoman.
Oh, don't mind. This is far better than what we
have. Members of the NCLP, I'm going to come back to ratifying or not ratifying last, because it makes sense in that context. Let us first talk about the development assistance matter and the and tourism more specifically. What's important to understand is firstly to distinguish between individual member states of the European Union and their development assistance programs, which may or may not have tourism support as an element, and the European Union quantum multi-indicative program for South Africa. It's two different things. They try to coordinate that it supports one another and not contradict or replace one another or replicate one another. But so that's important to understand. Which contribution are you talking about, the European Union or the member country? When you talk now about, specifically in this case now, which is relevant, the European Union, as we've said, led by Treasury, is in a process of shifting away from the project support, where they went to what they call sector budget support, in which they said, okay, no, within the health budget, we will give you money for a program on HIV prevention. So much, and we want you to do A, B, C, D, and they may put all kinds of qualifications in that program within the budget of health. But then it goes to the new approaches to say, no, general budget support. If we agree that your outlook, your strategy for your health services is this, we agree with you, we argue it, we think this may be in, that should come out, or this should be emphasized, that should be de-emphasized. Then we give you the money through Treasury for health and you go do it. Then you must come back at the end of the year and explain what you did with the money, because they have fiduciary responsibility to report back to Brussels about that. Now, it depends on where you stand now in terms of tourism development in the shift from budget support, from program support to sector budget support to general budget. That is the first thing to understand, and that between Treasury, Mr. Robin Tolley, who is now the Chief Director of, Robin Tolley is the man to point you in the right direction, who to talk to in Treasury about the questions you need answered. Then to say that maybe it can be explored through the International Relations Office of Parliament. Ms. Mokate is now not yet replaced, I believe, but Mr. Hopa has to connect the details to Kayun, that I do not see any reason why members of parliament cannot attend the annual review, because it's an open thing, where the provinces are brought in, the government departments are brought in, and they prepare firstly with Treasury what it is that they want to see emphasized in the next budget and in the next tranche. Then they meet with the European Union, and they share that information. The European Union puts their case, they argue it out, and then they say, okay, this is what we agree upon. I see no reason why members of Parliament cannot observe, at least, if not actively participate. We can explore that, and we will offer to facilitate that for you with Mr. Robin Tawley is the one who leads that on that side. So there, you will now see the province that you may be representing. What is, you will also be able to see just how hard your own province people are working to get money. You know, what they say when they're there, are they there, did they rock up for the meeting that time? That you will also see as an overview function, which I think is very healthy. So yeah, that could be explored. Now, when it gets to, what do we do about, in terms of now, like community tourism support? You remember earlier I referred to the fact that we had these cooperation forums, of which we have already established about 16, and another 6 or so is to be rolled out. Now, let me just check here if tourism is actually one of them. You know, what should happen in this case, if we now say that we are going to cooperate on tourism and our, I don't have time to see where the tourism fits in right now. One of these forums, if not a tourism forum, will then, with the Department of Tourism in South Africa, cooperate in planning strategies to address community-based tourism, learning best practice from the European Union and what they have experienced in member states with supporting community-based tourism, sharing the expertise and sharing support through maybe budget support or individual member state country support for community tourism-based programs. So what you will not see is that in this agreement that we will agree and decide with the European Union to put up a game park somewhere in Mpumalanga, which the community holds shares in. You won't see that type of thing. You will see the Department of Transport cooperating with the Department of Economic Development, maybe with DTI, in developing strategies based on expertise learned in the European Union, based on programs that they have applied, how will it work if we adapt it to our circumstances? And once we have designed those strategies and those best practices and identified them, then that is where we go to Treasury and say, okay, Treasury, now talk to the European Union to allocate some budget support to tourism so we can pursue this community-based tourism. We go to things like the European Investment Bank and say, tourism has this strategy now. Here are the possibilities for the private sector to invest. Here is the kind of community support that we need through a concessionary loan from the Development Bank on the side of the community to bring their side to the table. That is the way in which this article on support for tourism is going to work. It's not going to allocate money to provinces or to communities. It's not going to establish projects in any community. It's going to try and facilitate communities to help themselves in developing this, linking up with the private sector and donor funds. So that is the context of which we're talking here. But if you want to pursue the actual interests of your constituency, I would suggest to go and attend those review arguments and to talk to Treasury about that.
Can I say something, please?
Yeah. Can we open your mic?
May I please?
Yeah.
Can we then agree to agreeing with this document, but then also ask Mr. van Vollenhoven to please see that we can attend that next annual consultations so that we can see what's happening as a committee, because that's where we really come in. Thank you.
Honourable Chairman opposes that.
Sorry, thank you so much. I think before you close up the meeting, I'm quite interested to see, I think seem to be this agreement covering a lot of area, but I'm just curious to know, so I seem to be, they don't talk about agriculture development side. Is that because the conflict of interest between us and EU, or maybe there's other reasons?
The shorthand answer to that is that agriculture is addressed in the trade chapter, extensively so, in the trade chapter. So that is why you see little here. And in the development assistance programs, in the national consultations led by Treasury, there may be budget support for agriculture. But there was no... you know, but it's an interesting point. I must go and look at the agreement. Why is agriculture? Because agricultural development and rural agriculture, food security, and if we had negotiated this now, post the food spikes, the price spikes we saw 2 years ago when we were in Bordeaux at the summit, agriculture, food security would have worked its way into it. Now, this agreement has now been reviewed and is open for amendment simply by, I think, exchange of letters to add little more things and more things and more things to it. And it's actually something to argue that food security and agricultural development needs to be looked at. But agriculture is addressed extensively in the TDC.
What you said on the funding, I'm sure we'll deal with it as a committee. I will take it forward. Yeah, I'm sure you answered some of the questions, even the Honourable Adams' question.
Now to turn to Honourable Mr. Adams, if we would postpone the agreement, we would need to understand why we postpone and what it is that we either gain by the postponement and what the opportunity costs of such a postponement will be. We tried to hold this back for a couple of months. We for 3-4 months had this idea. We were very angry at the European Union for being so hard-nosed about the efforts, and decided, well, if they want to go that route, maybe we should just hold back and not show our eagerness to sign this agreement. But as we were doing this, the maritime people were squealing at the back over this shoulder to say, no, but they need to get into contact with the European Union because they need to roll out their maritime safety structures and they need good practice from the European Union. They need to train their people for these things. You have safe container legislation because, you know, you can put radioactive material into a container and ship it into Europe or from Europe into here, and our customs people must be able to manage it. So they were clamoring all over us and say, but, you know, we've got to get going on this. The ICT people, even on tax, there's an interest by Treasury to cooperate on certain standards and things with the European Union. So we figured out that while we're now trying to solve this trade problem, everybody else down the line is now disrupted because Brussels cannot step forward in terms of allocating their resources to cooperating with South Africa, flying to South Africa to come and have workshops, if there's no legal foundation to do that, because what do they tell their parliament, who gave them certain money to do things, that they're going to do other things, and parliament will say, but where did you get the mandate to do this from? There's no international agreement for you to go to South Africa and to go help them. So we will pay an opportunity cost for as long as we delay by disrupting the cooperation in this myriad of cooperation forums. If we decide to not ratify the review, the only thing that happens then is we continue with the TDCA as it stands, because that is still the foundation of the agreement until this ratification comes in. So we will just go with less than what we've had. Not less than what we've had, but there's more pronounced cooperation foreseen in the new one. So for that reason, I would argue that the most beneficial thing to do is to ratify.
Thank you.
And it would also contain, no doubt, the disarmament and the non-proliferation, which is what we advocated for. That was a request for something, and then we lose that. Thanks very much. Any further questions? For clarity, I think it has been properly explained, Honorable Dekhale.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm having a request that if we are going to amend on agriculture, we have people in Limpopo who are living in a rich soil, they're working very hard, they're producing everything that one can think of concerning agriculture, but they cannot export them. If you're going to amend, please think about them.
I also know that when Honorable Chen asked about agricultural products, I also know that we have our issue with our cheese, with the European Union. And always we cannot send our cheese there. So it's one of those things. I think that's why she asked about, what about agricultural products? So whatever, I think it is loud and clear what is being said even by Honorable Dekhale, that not only the Limpopo, in actual fact, the whole of the country has got, you know, that is why we're also having challenges in the WTO, precisely on agricultural products, because there's this and that and that. So it will assist us. If we sign, I'm sure it will be a step forward. So that when we go to the WTO for negotiations, we take that also further. But I'll give you also an opportunity to comment.
Just quickly, I've got good news for you in terms of the cheese agreement. It's just been published. The cheese agreement is finalized and it is now being implemented, I believe. So DTI will be able to give you more information about that, but the cheese agreement is done. Now, in terms of agriculture, just to remind you that this is negotiated in the EPA context now, and if the EPA fails and we decide to withdraw from the EPA, we come back to this agreement and review its trade chapter. Then again, we will address those agricultural market access issues, but in the trade context, in the trade chapters of this very agreement. Unless if we sign the EPA, then of course we will take the trade chapters out of this agreement. Then it becomes an EPA. But that is where that is addressed. And that is mostly to be addressed through DTI, who has been the lead of the trade negotiation. But it is perfectly legitimate to speak to agriculture to say, why don't you, under the strategic partnership, you don't even now longer have to wait for the TVCA, establish a forum of cooperation on agricultural development. Now, what we're going to do, I may share with you, is the European Union has what they call a cohesion policy. And within the cohesion policy, they have structural funds in which they apply, you know, if the lesser prosperous states to join the European Union to come up to that band that they all those hoops they have to jump through, budget deficit at a certain level, money supply at a certain level, inflation at a certain level, to get those poorer European Union countries there, they use these structural funds in order to stimulate economic development. For them, it's more industrialization. But we're going to have a workshop with them on structural funds to see how we can apply what they've learned there, especially towards rural development. That is what we want to emphasize. But that is still to be discovered, how that can work and what it means. But we are working on that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I don't know whether I asked a question that's out of line, but where would we find a list of the current projects on a website, or where can we get hold of them? And from what I understood from Mr. Van Vollenhoof, and he said for some of the funds were committed already, so where did it go, and how do we find out what happened so that we can follow up with our provinces?
Can you submit, give us that information or submit it in full?
Mr. Chair, that is an extremely difficult question because of the nature of development assistance. If it is budget support, then the Department of Agriculture may tell you, together with Treasury, what was allocated from the European Union and what is it sector budget support or was it program support? Or it can be, is it the European member state who has its own little project in Mpumalanga, in a community somewhere to build rondavels for accommodations. So there's no central point, there's no central clearinghouse for all projects. For European Union projects, Treasury must be able to tell you, agriculture must be able to tell you, or tourism must be able to tell you. But if that fails or becomes too difficult, Mr. Jerry McGovern in the EU delegation in Pretoria must have a good idea about where the money is going to, because he's in charge of development. Even that may be a shortcut, because it now sounds funny for me to say we as South Africans must go ask the Europeans about it. But I think a shortcut practical thing is you'll know who works with it on the South African side, so you can know who to talk to on the South African side to give you the answer. I think that is the best way to go about identifying.
So, because all these funds are committed now, there's no money that will go back unused.
Let me just comment on that. When we talk about funds committed, I think that the term, I use the term more in connection with the European Investment Bank, rather so than the country strategy paper, which is the development assistance agreement that we talk about from time to time. So, yeah, I mean, that 900 million gets allocated in tranches over a six-year period, which expires in 2 years, I think. So there must be two tranches still open and in the process of being committed now. The European Investment Bank money, which is also open to develop tourism infrastructure, that includes communities and whatever, from five-star hotels to anything can be done with the European Investment Bank. Now, the European Investment Bank's 900 million is fully obligated for the tranche. That's why we want them to up it and give us a 1.5 billion in the next tranche. But then you're free to approach the European Investment Bank to say, any province, any public-private entity, a community and a developer of a hotel can approach the European Investment Bank and say, we want money to build this hotel. So no, that money is available there, but it's fully obligated for the moment to be ready. Thank you.
Thanks very much. I'm sure all of us in all our provinces are thinking now of building hotels and communities. There is some funds available. Honourable members, we've got to agree to the rectification. Is there any mover that Honourable Adams moves that rectify? Honourable Shen supports. Okay, it has got the support. Thanks very much, and thanks very much for taking time and delaying your flight. It really showed commitment that you really wanted to do this. Once more, pass our thanks to the DG, to the Minister and the Deputy for this, because they really pleaded, we also pleaded, that please, let us have it. But thanks very much, and to you personally, and Mr. Hopper. Honourable members, the meeting stays adjourned.